That'll take it.
Yeah, you never got a support.
Okay.
Right.
People will do here so early.
Right. I have my glasses on. Good evening and welcome to the October 2nd meeting of the Community Service District. Would you get up and join Kevin Graves in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
Thank you.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Carol, can you call the roll, please?
President Simon.
Here.
Vice President Graves.
Here.
Director Pease.
Here.
Director Steele.
Here.
Director Wiesen.
Here.
Thank you. It's time for public comment. During public comment, the public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may make comment on any item on the agenda at the time it is called before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up and speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions from the board must go through the chair. Do we have any public comment? Hi.
Yes. Hi. My name is Jacqueline Caravello. I'm a resident of Discovery Bay. And I'm here to inquire, I guess, or suggest that we might think about some kind of commemorative plaque or something at the community center for Ray Tietrault. He did a lot for this community, and I just think that it would be fitting at the community center or someplace in Discovery Bay. And I can give you my phone. If that was ever decided on, I would do everything I could to help. I think donation, I think that people would actually donate people in the community, to pay for anything.
I think it's an excellent idea. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comment? I'll close public comment and we'll move on to presentations. Staff?
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This evening, David Early from the TriLink State Route 239 Alignment Project is here this evening to give the board an update on that alignment and the status of the project today.
First game, they've got a black and white game going on the 9th, and then their official first game, I think, is the 16th.
Which one are you watching? NHL starts like next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, the NHL, yeah. I think the first preseason game is the 12th. They've got a scrimmage on the 9th, which is open to the public, free and open to the public.
Down in San Jose?
No, Thunder.
Thunder does?
Yeah.
Are you going to go out there? When is that?
I'm there every year. I don't miss a game.
When was that? When is that free scrimmage?
The 9th.
What day is it?
Doors that? Open. Doors open at 6, game at 6:30, I believe.
All right, we'll come out.
Yeah.
goes to check out.
No, Rod's just that much fun to hang out with.
Yeah.
I am entertaining.
Yeah.
And most of your friends are too.
Thunder Black and White game is 6 o'clock. Doors open at 6 o'clock on Wednesday the 9th.
Okay, but if you're in person, it doesn't matter if it's color of black and white, does it?
Well, it's the reason they're calling it black and white is because they train in black and white jerseys. One team will be black, the other team will be white.
Yeah,
because it was worked.
Hey, what are we doing?
Here, it's this one. Function F1.
Mr. President?
Hang on here, big boy. You've been gossiping over there?
I'm having kill time over here.
You're doing a good job. I've got one of the agency reports to the secondary, and I think that's
what we got to do first.
That's what we're going to do. So we're going to come back to presentations. The sheriff's report, I see AJ is here, so we know that we have one report.
I'm here. He's over here this time. Apologize, my back to everybody. I also have another apology. I don't have handouts for you this time. We installed a new computer system on September 9th, and we've had problems with the administrative functions, meaning the reports. I could generate a report, but some of the cases appear two and three times on it, and others don't appear at all. It's what I had to do. I can give some information. What we had to do is go through everybody's what we call unit history, what every deputy did every day for the month, pull out all the cases and then look them up individually, you know, sort of old school, hand by hand. So some of the highlights, overall crime rate is basically the property crimes down for the month, which is good. We had 5 as opposed to, I believe it was 7 or 8 for the previous month, so that's a good thing. The other positive thing, we made Delta Station, the deputies, not Marine Patrol did some too, but ours, made 5 arrests for the month, 2 juveniles for petty theft and possession of stolen property, 2 adults for possession of dangerous drugs, and we made 1 warrant arrest on top of that. Now, Marine Patrol made 2 additional arrests in Discovery Bay for probation violations and a whole bunch of DUI arrests. I wasn't able to pull those stats. I know about the probation arrests because we assisted in them, but I know they made a bunch of DUIs. So, I don't know if that's a good thing or bad, but we're taking people who probably shouldn't be on the streets off the streets, or at the very least getting them into the court system so they can address the issues. So that's a positive thing. So, and lastly, as far as the crime rate, the few property crimes we did have, I still just ask the public and everybody, please, please, please lock things up, whether it's your car, your garage, your side gate. 75% of the thefts were unlocked, either unlocked car, unlocked side gate, garage, whole garage door left open overnight. And unfortunately, it's just inviting problems. So that was it. And then one last thing I want to leave you with, sort of a rumor control issue. I know on October 12th, there is the Rocktoberfest that's going to be down here. I just found out about it yesterday. We already sent our letter off to the letter of support, I guess you will, off to the Public Works, which does the permit issuing. But when I learned about it, I heard from several people, there is a rumor going around, and that's my point of rumor control, that somehow the sheriff's office plans to block or interfere with the permitting process or somehow not allow Disco Bay to have events. I don't know. But anyway, I wanted to tell everybody, the rumor's not true. It's just false. We do not issue permits. We do not deny permits. The only participation we have in the process for events is to send a letter expressing any concerns we have. And I do the letters. I've done all the letters for the last 2 years for Discovery Bay. And every single one of those letters says the same thing, that whoever it is that's sponsoring it needs to get all permits necessary and just follow the law. That's all they say. And every single event, to my knowledge, has been approved. So whoever it is that's spreading these rumors, however they got started, maybe it's misinformation. I'd like to think it is. I would like to think there's not some sort of agendas, ulterior motive going on. I don't know. But whatever it is, it's not true. We support the event. In fact, I've already sent the letter of support off to the event, just because I found out about it. I know that's part of the process. I just went ahead and sent it without being asked. The event sponsoring is supposed to be done 30 days in advance. It isn't, but we're going to go ahead and try to expedite it and get the permits done anyway, which is what we do. Supervisor Pivo's office does the same thing. When people call us, we're always trying to help get these things going. Even if people don't have all the information they're supposed to or miss the deadlines, we're still going to try to get these things done. So actually the opposite's true. We're trying to help. We like these events. We think they're great for the community. So I just wanted to put that rumor to bed. You know, and I brought, for anybody who's interested, I put over on the little table back there copies of the ordinance on obtaining the permits, how to go about it. It's 10 pages long, granted, it's a little wordy, but it's not that complicated. I'm not the sharpest knife, and I got it. So I left it back there, anybody who's interested. And if it's still confusing, call me. You can see Tony Fontenot over at the Annex. He actually has the forms there. You can download them off the internet if you don't want to see him. Supervisor Peebles' office can help with the forms. So we're here to help, not hinder. So I just wanted to reassure the board that I've already adjusted staff schedules. We're going to be there for the event, so I just want to reassure the board that's great. Wherever this rumor came from, it's not just
okay,
not
anybody,
true.
If anybody comes to us, we'll tell them we've got it for the horse's mouth.
Yes.
AJ, you're a good company. I got that same accusation against me when they tried to do the farmer's market, so yeah. Who knows where it starts.
Yeah, I don't know where it starts, what the agenda is, but I just
want
to assure the board.
I don't have control over the county, but yet thanks I was for, blocking yeah. the whole thing.
Thanks for supporting the
community. I just want to assure you that we're on board. We already sent our letter. I've got the Deputy Scheffner is going to be flexing his schedule. He'll be at the event, so we're here to help, not get in the way. So I don't know where the rumor started, but I wanted to put
Can
it to bed so we
comment?
Don't have any more problems.
I
yes.
just wanted to say thank you for whoever on your group that saved a dog the other day on Discovery Day Boulevard. I was right behind the car, and he just flipped that car around, turned the lights on, and helped that poor woman whose dog had gotten loose. So
good.
That was very nice.
Thank you very much. It's good to hear. Thank you.
Any other questions?
So, again, I apologize. Hopefully we'll have all of this worked out for next month. Staff working on it, and I'll give you two handouts next month.
Thank you. Okay, we have no other agency reports, I don't think, do we?
No, not this evening.
Okay, let's go back to presentations.
Technical glitches corrected. David Early.
Thank you very much. My apologies for having caused that technical glitch by moving the computer. It's a pleasure to be with you this evening. Again, my name is David Early, and I'm a consultant to the Contra Costa Transportation Authority, working as a sub-consultant to the Parsons Group to help to do the very preliminary planning for a roadway facility and transportation facility, multimodal transportation facility, known as State Route 239 or TriLink, which I think will be of great interest to the board and to other members of the Discovery Bay community. What I'm really here to speak about this evening is a feasibility study. We have now published this document after about 18 months of study, and it is available online on our website, and I'll give you that web address later. And what I'm going to do this evening is usually give you a summary of this document and the work that's happened over these last 18 months. And I'll be talking about five things here: what TriLink is, what we've done in this study, what our findings have been, where the project is going, and then I'll be opening it up for any comments or questions that you as a board may have. So what is TriLink? Let's start with that. TriLink is what we call in the technical parlance a legislatively designated but unconstructed highway facility. That is to say that there's actually a state law that lists every state highway by number and says where it goes from and to. And State Route 239 is listed as extending from Brentwood to the Tracy area, but there is no construction, obviously. There's no signed State Route 239, and it's not even mapped as to where exactly it would be. So we've been studying a possible multimodal link from State Route 4 near Brentwood to the I-205 corridor just west of Tracy. It's a route that has not been adopted by the California Transportation Commission. That would be the next step. But we have been awarded a grant of $14 million from the federal government under the Safety Lou federal designation in the year 2005 that has allowed for quite a robust study of the feasibility of constructing this facility. We've spent about $2 million so far. It'll be another $2 million to get through this first phase of feasibility planning, and then there'll be $10 million more for additional planning as well. So it's a very robust grant at the planning level. And it's a study that the grant was originally awarded to the county, to Contra Costa County, but the study was then transferred to the Contra Costa Transportation Authority because they obviously have the ability to oversee a large-scale transportation project like this. So it is now a CCTA project. Boy, we are having bad luck here.
We're going to bring the sheriff back up again.
Why don't we post the comment?
stick out. Well, I reload.
We have this presentation in our agenda packets.
Okay. So the area, again, that we're studying, and I know you all know this area, of course, very well, is an area that extends here in eastern Contra Costa County from the Brentwood area, runs through East County and down actually a corner of the Alameda County line, depending on which alignment that we take, possibly a good deal of very far eastern Alameda County, and out to the I-205 area where N-580, where Tracy is located, and we would be looking for a connection somewhere along Interstate 580 or 205. So one of the things we did at the outset of the process was that we put together a document called the Study Impetus. I believe you got that document separately. I'm not going to go over it in detail. And I know you're very aware of these issues, but we really realized that the reason for this earmark and the reason that folks have long talked about this a possible State Route 239 are these 5 points here, needing to improve regional connectivity and end what many people have said, talked about East County being a kind of a cul-de-sac with relatively good access coming in on Highway 4 from the west, but not very good access going east or south. I'm wanting to change that and improve regional connectivity, being able to support already planned development and job realization within this region. There's a lot of capacity for new jobs in the cities of Brentwood and Oakley and Pittsburgh and down into Tracy as well, but that really hasn't been realized probably because of that lack of transportation connectivity. The ability to enhance goods movement, to get goods in and out of this East County area, to improve roadway safety of the many roads like Highway 4, Basco Road, Byron Highway, all of which have some safety issues, and also being able to serve emergency response needs, both to get people out of the region and also to get emergency supplies in if there ever were a disaster or crisis. So what did we do in looking at this study, at this possible facility? Well, the first thing we did is we defined 4 possible elements that we've been studying throughout this process. We've been looking at what we call a North Link, which runs from the Brentwood area, essentially along the Basco Road corridor and down towards the Byron Airport. We looked at an airport connector that goes from the Basco Road alignment over to the Byron Highway. We looked at a South Link, which runs essentially parallel to Byron Highway itself. And we looked at a new freeway link, the I-580 link, that would extend from the Basco area straight down to the area where the I-205, I-580 interchange is located. And we've been studying these throughout the process. We built a 10-county traffic model that's enabled us on a very robust basis to model how this would work from a transportation perspective. That model includes all 9 counties that are technically in the Bay Area, from Contra Costa all the way over to San Francisco and from Sonoma County all the way down to Santa Clara County. And then it includes the 10th county of San Joaquin, so that we have a modeling capacity that really looks at all of this area and that allows us to understand what the transportation needs are and what the transportation impacts would be. We also mapped environmental considerations, and you have quite a number of slides that shows you some of the issues that we looked at. We considered planned development in communities like Mountain House. We considered brine farmland and the constraints that it creates. We considered lands that have already been acquired for conservation and habitat preservation. We considered alkali soils, which are important habitat and biological resource type. We considered the vernal pools, another very important type of facility, of resource. We looked at the Byron Airport and its clear zones and utility infrastructure, such as the canals and rail lines that run through the area, the electrical lines. We looked at the fact that much of this area is an identified wind resource area, and there are already a large number of windmills, as well as solar facilities planned in the area. And we looked at the Delta Protection Zone and the waterways, although we're mostly avoiding the DPZ because we'll be to the west of it. It was important to know its location as well. We looked at historical resources and cultural resources, such as the very old and important Byron Hot Springs buildings. And that all allowed us to come in and look at and fine-tune those into a set of five potential route options, which you see listed here. I already mentioned them, and I'll go over them again in a little more detail. The North Link has two options, which you see there with the green and yellow lines. One that really extends along the Vasco Road alignment, that's the alignment to the left, and then the one over to the right would swing down around the east side of Byron Hot Springs and connect to the existing Byron Highway. We have an airport connector going from Vasco Road over to Byron Highway, essentially in the alignment of Armstrong Road, which, as you know, is discontinuous today. This would connect along that Armstrong alignment from Vasco to the Byron Highway. We have a south link that would run parallel to the Byron Highway, and we have three separate alignments for a possible I-580 link that would connect from the north link in its two terminus locations and run through Alameda and County, Contra Costa, and then Alameda County to get down to the I-580, I-205 interchange. All of these facilities have some viability. All of them appear to serve different needs, although the two North Link options and the three I-580 link options are alternatives to each other. At this point, all of these possible links will be moved forward into further study so that we keep as many options open as possible as we move forward. So we did also, as part of this, consider green design applications. We are proposing to incorporate green designs such as solar panels, recycled materials, electrical vehicles, charging stations into this roadway facilities, and to use the Envision rating system, which was put together by Harvard University and the Association of Roadway Engineers, to really look at the greenest possible roadway facilities within our society. We did look at various implementation scenarios and preliminary costs. I should caution that this project is completely unfunded today, other than the $14 million of seed money for planning that we have. And as you can see, the costs here, even the airport connector, which is the cheapest and least complicated, is $30 to $50 million. The South Link and North Link are both in the $70 to $120 million range. And the I-580 link, which would be a full expressway with freeway-like features and several very large interchanges, including a new four-legged interchange at that I-580-205 interchange, comes to about $450 to $500 million. We have been looking at transit as well. There are a variety of transit options, fast bus, bus rapid transit, true BART, e-BART. Those all have varying price tags, which are even above the $500 million range, depending on the technology chosen. We have been also looking at implementation scenarios. We've been starting to look at the organizational structure by which TriLink might be constructed. We're looking at cooperative arrangements among the counties, so each county would build its own pieces. But we're also looking, for instance, at a joint powers authority, where the various entities within this region, perhaps the three counties, perhaps the three transportation agencies, perhaps some of the cities, would all come together to form a JPA that could administer this project, much like the State Route 4 bypass has been administered already today. That's also been done through a JPA. We've also looked at project delivery and funding methods, including traditional public financing, innovating financing like private public partnerships, new funding through Measure J and its reauthorization, possible tolling in limited capacities along the new segments of roadways. All of those are under consideration and will be looked at further in the next phases of the project. So I mentioned already that there isn't really funding identified. This graph just shows you the way that funds are already spoken for today. There's only about $242 billion of funding in the entire state, which may sound like a lot of money, but when you consider that this project could cost close to $1 billion by itself and is not even listed anywhere, it gives you a sense of the fact that there really isn't that much money to go around for this. So we don't think that traditional highway funding is going to work, and we're looking instead at supplementary sources, such as perhaps a continuation of the Transportation Impact Fee Program here in East County, reauthorization of Measure J. Every time the transportation tax has been reauthorized, it's had some marquee projects, which in the past, for instance, have included the new bore of the Caldecott Tunnel and the widening of Highway 4 coming through East County. Perhaps State Route 239 TriLink could be the marquee project in the next reauthorization. We are also looking at user fees, tolling, and private financing, and other funding initiatives that may become available over time.
We have also engaged a large variety of stakeholders in this process. We've been having a whole series of meetings. We've met with several stakeholder committees five and more times. We've had public officials at the technical staff level from over 18 different agencies who've met with us to talk about the project. We've also had a non-governmental organization group of business and environmental advocates who've been meeting and giving us feedback so that we make sure that we're staying true to what can receive broad community support. We've had technical staff meeting as well, and we've been meeting with the elected officials from each of these bodies as well. We have had robust stakeholder review of all of this, and we're now going out to about 18 different public presentations like this one this evening to talk about the project and make sure that all the elected boards within the region are up to speed on what's happening. We have also involved the general public. We've had public open house meetings in Brentwood, Tracy, and Mountain House. We also have had and actually still have an online virtual workshop that you can get to on our website, trilink239.org. If you go there, you can actually see and be engaged in the community workshop that we already held. It's an opportunity to hear me actually go through all the information about it. You can listen to it online. You see all the images from the meeting, and then you're asked to give the feedback, the same feedback that we ask people for at the meetings themselves. So you can let folks here in the community know that they can still go to that TriLink 239 meeting or website, click on the virtual meeting and give that input. One can also download this whole report on that website as well. So what are some of the findings about the project? Let me go through these quickly for you as well. We have found that this project, if built, would help to improve connectivity and relieve congestion. We've done traffic impact analyses all the way through the year 2040 and have found that without a facility like this, Byron Highway actually will, within about 10 to 20 years, have more traffic that it can carry today. Than it can carry in its current configuration. We do need to make some improvements, and this package of improvements would actually create enough capacity to serve ongoing growth in the region.
What year?
This is through year 2040, and there's actually plenty of capacity even for the year 2040.
Okay.
It would support local job growth. There's quite a bit of additional capacity for job growth within the region. This graph shows capacity on that blue line way at the top and projections of future job growth on the lower lines down below. And we do believe that this facility would help to engender additional job growth. It would enhance goods movement. It would be an effective alternative for trips coming to Eastern Contra Costa County and actually into the Bay Area as a whole. It would free up capacity on I-580 and would be a very attractive facility for truckers coming into East County, and also, again, free up transportation capacity on 580 for goods movement along that freeway corridor also. It would improve roadway safety on all of the facilities that we're talking about. It would avoid the issues along Byron Highway where you have sharp turns in the railroad crossings, the sharp curves on Vasco Road. All of those facilities, those issues would be addressed through this new facility. It would improve emergency access so that we could get additional goods and transportation in and out. And it would actually reduce vehicle miles traveled and greenhouse gas emissions. So it's actually only about a 3.5% decrease in VMT and GHG, which doesn't sound huge, but when you look at the absolute numbers, it's about 4 million miles per year, which creates a decrease of about 400,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide each year. And that is a pretty significant number. It's only 3.4% of total traffic, but still a huge number when you compare that to when you look at the absolute numbers. So where are we going from here? Let me just wrap up by saying that we do anticipate making a formal presentation of this feasibility study to the CCTA board in the near future, and then preparing a final feasibility study, which will be taken to our project advisory committee, which includes members of the boards of supervisors of each of the three counties, as well as members from each of the involved cities and the other involved entities. And we hope for formal approval of this feasibility study in November of this year. Once we get there, we have a whole series of implementation steps that are shown on this chart that will take us through the year 2020 and beyond. We will be moving this into formal processes that follow the Caltrans process
This may or may not be a formal Caltrans facility at the time it's built, but we do want to be sure to follow Caltrans procedures so that it can become a Caltrans facility in the future. I think you know that that's a lengthy process and a complicated process, but one that makes sure that really all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted, there's heavy public involvement, and there will be a whole series of steps that would lead, we hope, to construction sometime around the year 2024, where we might begin to see construction of some of these of some or all of these facilities, depending on both the clearance as well as the funding. So we are still at the very beginning of the process, but there is robust funding still available to continue the planning process, and I'm here to be able to answer any questions and take any comments you may have as we move forward. So I'll open it up at this time for any thoughts that you may have, and I'm happy to answer questions that you have.
Marianne, any questions?
I have none, thank you.
Bill?
Yeah, as you move along, and I understand you're at the beginning phases and you have scenarios that you're looking at, how do you see the process kind of coming together to get to the point where all the bodies are in full agreement that this alignment, whatever that is the best? What,
can you kind of go through a little question, bit of that? And I think that even that we don't know yet. I'll give you the best guess that I have, and honestly I'm speaking a little off the record here, but I think we see a need to figure out the administration and implementation body and process first, and once that's in place, it will be that process and that body who will make the decisions, Bill, that you're speaking about. So I think that, you know, if it is going to be a JPA, we're probably going to begin relatively soon, say over the next year, to talk to the interested local agencies to find out which of them would feel it's appropriate to be a part of that JPA, get buy-in from perhaps organizations that don't have a seat on the JPA and make sure that's okay with them, and then get the JPA formed, and then continue these technical studies pretty much simultaneously, so that we're doing an evaluation on a much more detailed basis of the pros and cons of those two North Link alignments and the three I-580 link alignments, so that we start getting funding ideas in place. Bring those then to the JPA board itself once the JPA is created, or to the three counties if we choose not to have a JPA, but have that formal body or the three formal bodies be the ones then to approve the work and give actual technical direction as to how things should move forward.
I would agree. I think the JPA is probably the best way to go versus three separate counties now.
Chris?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Good presentation.
One of the questions, I've lived here a long, long time. I've been here since very early 80s, and I've watched the little tiny bits of improvements come over the years, and I've watched the time that they were implemented, they were obsolete. Mm-hmm. And one of them, in case in point, would be the bypass, which was it was obsolete the day they opened it. They spent millions upon millions of dollars, and I'm assuming there were studies similar to this before they built that. They opened it, they've now gone back and spent twice what they've spent before widening it, putting overpasses in. My concern is by the time 2024 comes, I drive Vasco Road every day, I drive 580 every day. It's a parking lot. Mm-hmm. And I think it's outlived its usefulness now. I mean, it's the point now where it's in capacity. By 2024, at the rate they're building, when this opens up, or if this comes to fruition, I should say, how do we know it's not going to be obsolete?
Well, let me just go back to these traffic numbers and show them to you in a little more detail. And I apologize that I don't really have a pointer, but if you look at these numbers, and if you can pick out I-580 on there, it's the one that has a 200,000 at the top. Traffic there today is in the smallest number, which is I believe it's about 154,000. And that's right at the capacity, I think we all know, of what that freeway can hold. Projections show that by the year 2040, all other things being equal, it goes to 220,000. And nobody can figure out how that could possibly be carried. This facility lowers it back down to 200,000, which takes a big chunk out of that 220, but is still not enough to make 580 function. So I wish I had an answer for you for 580. This project won't really address 580. But if you look at the other numbers, what you see is, for instance, 35,000 is sitting there by itself without other numbers below it. That's the future volume. The other numbers aren't there because it doesn't exist today. That's that I-580 link. We're projecting about 35,000 trips on that new I-580 link if and when it's built in 2040. That's actually very low volumes for a four-lane expressway capacity, and I think you would find if you could drive it today or even when you drive it in 2040 that would have very good free-flowing traffic within it. And these, of course, are the best available numbers we have, but they are based actually on very robust and optimistic projections about both economic development and housing development here in East County. So I don't think it'll be the case that the TriLink facility itself will be obsolete at the time it's built. And I would just caution you that my understanding, at least, of how things have moved forward with State Route 4 bypass is that it has been done in increments, but that planners did know that the pieces that are going on out there today would be needed very soon. And they've had a plan all along to do those. They did want to get the preliminary facility opened as quickly as possible so that people could take advantage of it. But I don't think it's been a surprise to the traffic planners that conditions are there the way they are, or that we needed to make the additions that are being worked on even as we speak.
It seems to me they could have saved millions of dollars. I know a couple projects we're doing right now. We started a second project that was going to come next year because a contractor was there and they'd already started the piping, and it was cheaper to do it right there.
Yeah.
Who knows what they wasted, millions of dollars coming back a second time to do it.
And we're certainly, through the studies we're doing now, we're certainly going to try and avoid those kinds of redundancies.
I'm looking at, not to beat this to death, but I'm looking at 580 and at 164,000. Is it over capacity now? And they're talking about putting another 36,000 cars there after this project is done.
Yeah, that's great.
You can't drive through there now.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, it's very scary to think about what's happening on I-580, and it is a reason that new facilities like this need to be built and will help to give some relief.
Is Alameda County friendly to this project?
We are making presentations to Alameda County as well, and it's really going to depend, I think, on a lot of negotiations. There's certainly been no formal stance taken. Those of you who have friends in Alameda County, I'd encourage you to talk to them. You probably are aware that Alameda County does have I'll try to put a map back up here too. Alameda County does have a very strict growth control measure in place called Measure D that essentially makes it impossible to do any new development in this area portion of eastern Alameda County where any of these three I-580 links would run. We believe that that does not preclude building a roadway like this, that this, for instance, does not require a vote of the people in Alameda County. But it is going to be clear, it's very clear that we need to make sure that there are adequate safeguards in place, that this does not become growth-inducing so as to conflict with Alameda County's Measure D, and it is going to take very careful negotiation. And honestly, I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the benefit to Alameda County is probably minimal. So even though the much of the roadway runs through Alameda County, I'm not sure they would become full financial partners in the project. So it really is going to be a project where the benefits are to Contra Costa and San Joaquin counties, and we're going to need to figure out the best way to work with Alameda County with that understanding.
Any questions from the public? Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. Again, I apologize for the technical glitches, but I'm glad that we could go through the presentation.
Committee liaison reports. We have any reports from county planning, transplan, code enforcement, or special districts?
The code enforcement meeting last month was canceled. So
that's a report. I'll take it. Consent calendar. If there's nothing that needs to be pulled off, can I get a motion, please?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor, we'll call for the vote.
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. New business. Preparation of plans and specifications for projects related to wastewater facilities. Staff. How are you?
It's like a team effort.
Yeah, okay.
Dog and pony. I'm the pony.
Mr. President, members of the board, thank you. Ray Harris is here. He's going to discuss some of the projects that we want to bring forward for board consideration this evening, two of which are included in the wastewater master plan and are not bond funded or funded at this point in time, but we do want to move forward with their design. And Greg will explain those two projects. And the other item is lift station F renovation, which is not included in the master plan, but is included in the bond fund project. So we do have funding for that project. So Greg, if you can go ahead and explain the two projects, or the three projects, and what we're looking for this evening. Essentially looking to get the first two projects shovel ready for future development.
Okay. Basically, when we did the master plan, we divided the master plan into objects that were needed for redundancy and reliability. And those projects also happen to accommodate growth if it comes down the road. But predominantly for reliability reasons, we constructed those, and those are in the bond fund. So that's like the secondary clarifier, the oxidation dish that we're doing, the headworks projects, all these projects that are in process now. As part of that, we looked at the service area for the whole community and said, okay, the people that are currently in your boundary, if they develop, your flows are going to go up, and how might we accommodate those? And projects that were strictly needed for no other purpose but to accommodate growth. You didn't need them for liability or redundancy, but you will need them to accommodate growth, were separated out and not put in the bond fund. And those projects include a new effluent pump, an extra pump, so there's four, now you need five. And also an equalization basin to reduce peak flows to the UV facility and peak flows to the effluent pump station and the diffuser in the river. So those projects are required if your flows go beyond your current limit of 2.1 MGD. And the thinking was developer fees have been coming in, we could have these projects designed and ready to go when that development trigger comes along. So those include the first two projects. One's the effluent pump station, has a total budget of about $100,000. The district, we would design the pump, and the district would basically buy the pump and install it themselves, similar to how we did the UV, the last UV bank that we put in. The other pump is the equalization basin that, again, allows us to reduce peak flows to the UV system and the effluent pump station, and that would be designed and basically wait until the development trigger comes along, and then it would be constructed, and it has a project cost of, like, I forget, $680,000. The third project is Pump Station F. So Pump Station F is actually a pump station just out and around the corner here by the school. It collects all of the sewage for Discovery Bay, and that is the oldest pump station in Discovery Bay. So it's exactly 40 years old, plus or minus, right in there, 40 years. Never been rehabbed. Now, it has had issues. We've talked about Pump Station F in wastewater committee meeting. We've had issues of complete failure Pump Station F and tried to work by. And it's basically in dire need of, you know, let's get a facelift on it and get it operational to the point where you don't have to worry about the pump station. So we worked with Veolia and the wastewater committee on some options and how we want to do it. We came up with like six options, different cost ranges. And it was anticipated that work was going to need to be done on Pump Station F. So when the bond fund was put out, we knew this was an issue. We knew we were getting money for it, so we put money in the bond fund to cover the project. And based upon that, we've come up with a preliminary recommendation of the different options, and everyone seems to be leaning towards, let's convert it to a pump station where we don't have the operational problems we have now. So a little structural work, change the pumps to wet pit pumps instead of dry pit pumps, keep operators from having to go down in the wet well, and bring the access up to the surface to make it much easier to service the pump station. So that's the project on this. So those are the three projects that are there before you. I can answer more questions as you have them.
That project is in the bond fund in its entirety?
The design and construction for Pump Station F is in the bond fund. That's correct, yeah, at $500,000. The project budget is $500,000. We estimated that, you know, back when we were doing the bond fund, and that's what's in the bond fund.
The last item on the consent agenda had an attachment to it, and it identified the amount of revenues that we brought in. A couple years ago, if you recall, our capacity fee revenues were 000 for many years. This year alone, we brought in about $350,000 in fiscal year 11-12 or 12-13 that ended on June 30th. $280,000 of that is associated for sewer capacity fees. So $280,000. So that would be the revenue source for the, which is an appropriate use of those funds. For the first two projects, the export pump and then the equalization projects would both come out of those funding sources. And they are in the CIP, they're just unfunded in the CIP at this point in time. And Lift Station F is in the budget, and it is, as Gregory indicated, part of the bond fund. So if you have any other questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Clarification, that 280, you're talking about engineering, it's not to complete the project.
The
280 is not enough to complete both those projects.
No,
that we have. That's just
correct.
To initiate the engineering to make it.
We have the revenues on hand to do the design.
Right.
That's why
that's
you collect the fees, and we did the capacity fee
right.
study. We did the weight of the master plans. And so it's appropriate then to, if you have the revenues, go ahead and do it. Let's get the project, the feeling was to get the project shelf ready, ready to go, so that when development, when the trigger hits, we're ready to go. And we can go ahead and construct them. We will have the revenues in place to build them at that point in time. The first one's really inexpensive. It's $100,000. The second one is about $700,000, a little bit more money. Greg, if you want to just talk real briefly about the visit we had this morning and potential future with the big question is filtration. And that is a potential hit that might come down the road. And he had some conversation today with the state board.
Yes, the state board is currently, as you know, been working on our permit. Remember last year, probably I think about this time, we submitted a report of waste discharge to the regional board to review and update our permit. It's due every 5 years. And they've taken their time, but they're finally getting around to reviewing our permit. And they actually came out to the facilities today. So Virgil and I met with the regional board out of the facilities for about 4 hours to go over things, go over future permit limits, permit conditions, review, you know, how things physically work, to try to explain to them certain things. And, you know, in general, it went very well. You know, they are going to ratchet up, as they do every time, some of our limits. They want to knock some of them down. You know, can we do, well, we see you've done pretty good, so we're going to lower your limit. It's pretty much how they do it. You know, so every time you do better, they lower the limit. So, well, that's your new limit. So there's a couple of those, but it doesn't look too bad.
Do they raise the limit on the ones that we're not reaching?
No, they won't do that. And by the way, in specifically, they're going to lower our limit on copper. So we're going to go around and around again on copper. And I don't know if you've been here. We've been here for 10 years. We just can keep going around and out on that forever. But at any rate, they're going to lower the limit on copper. It doesn't look too bad, but these are the kind of preliminary things we have discussions with them about. The other thing that we were talking about in the master plan, one of the projects that was identified as likely was filtration. Okay, and it was identified as likely because if you were to grow for your master plan, you're going to have to expand your permit. And our sense is when you go to expand your permit, there's what they call anti-backsliding rules and anti-pollution rules. Like they'll let you grow your flow, but they won't let you make any more pollution, right? So you got to like clean it better, you know, to grow your more flow. So, you know, we suspect that you need filters. When we talked to them today, the regional board staff, Jim Marshall, who's been doing our permit for the last two cycles, and his assistant were there. You know, they were pretty much nodding in agreement that when you go to expand your flow increase, you know, filters are on your horizon, you know, kind of thing. But they don't
silo
look
filters
like
filters or what?
Silo filters. They're sand filters, but I'll answer that question in a second. But more importantly, they didn't seem to indicate that our new permit is going to require filters, which is a possibility, because sometimes your permit comes around, they come back and say, we want the wastewater cleaner, go put filters in, you know, kind of thing. So it still remains as identified in the master plan. If you're going to grow to the size of facilities listed in your master plan, i.e. the little development inside your community is going to happen, then you're going to need a flow increase, you're going to trigger a flow increase, and at that time, it's very likely you're going to get filters in your future. You know, now again, this is stuff that they're presenting us, because they were asking us, hey, you guys going to grow? What are you going to do? We say, hey, we don't have plans to grow right now. Right now, we're doing redundancy. We're doing liability. We're not growing. But they're building houses. Houses are picking up in Manteca. It's picking up the San Joaquin Valley. It's picking up Discovery Bay. Also, you know, when that housing pressure picks up, who knows? You know, that was kind of the discussion today. And, you know, we got into what we down the road with our permit. So,
one of the things that if the board recalls last October, the board adopted the capacity fee study that Bartle Wells provided to us. And in that study, we did account for the filtration. So it is in the study, it's in the master plan, it's in the study. What that means is that the capacity fees were identified with the filtration being there. So if we get hit for filtration, assuming the state does that, and it appears that that is probably a likely scenario, that we would have the revenues from development to pay for the filtration.
But you're not going to have that development, that revenue, until somebody starts developing. And nobody's developing right at the moment.
Well, that's the biggest ticket item in the master plan. It's about a $5 million hit, $4 to $5 million.
Right.
And you are right. There may be a bridge loan that might need, the district may need to borrow against our future capacity fees. That's certainly not uncommon for a big project like that. And the state gives you a number of years. They're not going to say it has to be, not necessarily, it would have to be in place day one. But they might give you 5 years to do it so that you can have the fees, generate the revenues in order to build your facility over a period of time.
Well, my other question would be, if there is no development at this present time, and there is very little development, what would the reason for the filtration be?
Well, the primary reason now is we have had some issues with the UV system. And, you know, Discovery Bay is very unique in the state that we do UV disinfection without filtration in front of it. So almost, effectively, the state knows of no other facility that does that. Everybody else has filters in front of the UV. So, and I asked Jim Marshall today that specific question. So the filtration is required under Title 22 regulations to reuse your wastewater, and so most people do that. But Discovery Bay was an early adopter of UV long before Title 22 even came out, and so they've always used it, right? Well, most of the time it's done well, but we've had issues of last several years, you know, with violations, and we've paid fines because of that. In fact, we just recently negotiated an ACL with the regional board over performance of the UV system. So the regional board could look at it and say, hey, you guys have tried for the last 3 or 4 years to, you know, operate your UV without problems, and for one reason or another, something always comes up and you have a problem, you know, not horrible, but it happened, you know, and every time we think we got it licked, we solved it, you know, 6 months go by and then boom, something happens and, you know, we thought we were fine and we weren't, you know, kind of thing. So they could sit back and say, you know what, we're not happy with your overall disinfection process, put filters in and make sure it works properly, and that would be the reason for it. They might require it, even though we don't have growth in the community. And then now it could be like this permit, though that's what we were asking them, you know, is this coming in this permit? And they didn't seem to indicate that. Also, over time, they changed the regulations on the receiving water. You know, they come back and say, oh, the Delta smell are dying, they're dying because of blah, blah, blah. Everybody up and down the river, you now have to treat this. You know, and so you could end up in a situation, your second permit from now, or your third permit from now, where they come back and say, even if you didn't grow a house one, nope, you guys are gonna have to put filters in to solve this problem. So regulation induced can occur separate from housing induced.
Questions?
No.
Yeah.
So this evening you're asking for about $125,000, staff's asking, for design of these three projects. Understand that. But I'm a little confused on the construction side. Construction services will be time material. I'm not grasping why it would be time material. Wouldn't these projects actually, when they're designed and we need them, go out to bid? Mm-hmm. And wouldn't that bid be the cost of the project?
Yeah, well, the way we've kind of sort of traditionally done projects in Discovery Bay is Discovery Bay is taking a big role in managing the construction of the project. And so we then end up sort of doing engineering services as directed by the town when they need it. You know what I'm saying? So it isn't like some projects you'll have an engineering firm come in and be like the whole construction manager and just manage the whole thing. You know, that's not traditionally how we've done it here. So traditionally, the towns manage their projects. We help out as they request us to help out. And also, some of the projects are starting, like the equalization basin. We're just going to design it. We're not building it yet. So I don't know when you're going to build it. So we wouldn't even know what our fee schedule would be when you're going to build it. I mean, you waited, you know, housing doesn't go anywhere, you know, it could be ready to go and we don't build it for 3 or 4 years,
anyway,
you know, so we couldn't.
But I think the light bulb just came on during the discussion. It's your construction, so the engineering construction services.
That's correct.
Not
That's
a project construction. It would all go out to bid.
Yeah, so we lost a word if you put engineering construction
there
services.
There you go. Right, exactly.
Okay.
The all projects would be bid except the pump. The pump is a pretty easy install for the district. They install it themselves. We just tell them what to do and order the pump from them. You know, but the other ones we got to bid. They go out to bid. Pump station F will go out. It's pretty critical. We'll go out to bid as soon as the job's done. We'll go out to bid immediately. The pump, we'll wait, I think, till your next fiscal budget or somewhere in there where we can sneak, you know, $7,000 to fill the pump station in. We'll buy the pump and the district will install it. The basin will sit until the flow trigger comes or people, developers are going to, you know, are going to step up and say, all right, we're going to start paying for stuff, you know, kind of thing. There's limited capacity right now to accommodate new projects. Actually, there's no capacity to accommodate new projects, you know. Based on the master plan, until we finish some of these projects, we can't even finish Hoffman's houses right now. Now, we finish some of these other projects, Hoffman can come in, but new projects, there's no capacity for them until, you know, we expand the permit and do some other things, and, you know, they're going to have to pony up and say, all right, we're willing to pay for stuff, or the district won't do anything. I mean, you're right, there's always a catch-22. We can't accommodate until we build them, but, you know, really, you line up until the developers say, you know, we're not going to mess around with 10 houses. You guys all get together, and when you're ready to go, you know, we'll work out something, but you're going to be on commitment to pay for this stuff, you know, kind of thing. So you work it out that way.
Well, any questions?
Not for me.
Questions from the audience? Thank you.
Right.
We have one in the back.
This is just regarding
come
the
up.
Filters.
Come on up.
Oh, I got to come up. I don't want to say anything, but... just regards to the Cheshire treatment, the filters that you guys are about to put in. Being a wastewater treatment operator, you guys should all, being on the water board, it would increase, well, how do I say it? It would make your effluent quality a lot higher, a less impact on the environment, and it's something that you should be striving for. That's all.
Thank you. Any other comments? Questions?
No, it is something we've discussed for the last 5 years. Every time we know it's coming down the road. And that's why I asked what kind of filters you're talking about, what you didn't address,
you told me you would. It's a good thing. So you had a good question. What kind of filters are we talking about? In this particular case, we're talking about 20-foot tall tanks.
Silo filters, right?
20-foot tall tanks with different layers of sand. Mm-hmm. And the water runs through the sand, and the sand grabs the particles out of the water, and then the water comes out of the sand. And then this particular one, then you backwash the dirt out of the filter, you know, and that kind of thing. So that's what we're talking about.
What are some examples of other filters that other?
Other kinds of filters, they use like membranes, so plastic membrane, and you force the water through the membrane. Okay. Other kinds of filters, they have cloth filters that literally are like, it's a big cylinder. You come in and they got like giant tubes of cloth, and you kind of go through the cloth, and then you wash off the cloth. You know, and so basically sand, membrane, or cloth are your kind of three flavors. Even when the plant was originally designed in 2000, the thought that we were going to need filters here someday was planned in, and space was allocated for it, and the type of filter was picked for it. So as Kevin has noted, you know, the idea that you will need filters someday have always been, even in the inception of the plant, was planned for it, there was space for it, and the hydraulics was set up to accommodate them.
If we've analyzed everything, we feel the sand filters are the best for our facility. How why do some of the other utilities utilize the membrane or the cloth filters versus sand?
You know, there's different pluses and minuses for each, right? One of them is how your hydraulics is set up, and because of the pre-planning, the hydraulics have been set up for the sand filter at Scurry Bay. Also, different proprietary technologies come along. You know, the sand filter's been around a long time, and so there's a lot of good test data on that. Some of the newer technologies don't have quite as much certainty, I would say, around them, and they're also maybe more sole source a little bit than some things. So, you know, different agencies make different discussions. In the master plan, they analyzed different filters, and they came to the conclusion that the sand filter was the best long-term cost option on a life cycle basis.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you need from us.
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, I don't know what I just did here. Okay, and we're pulling the video item two?
That's correct.
All right, we'll play that. Item three, staff.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. This item before you this evening is consideration of a reimbursement agreement between the Town of Discovery Bay and Disco Bay Partners LLC, which is more commonly known as Newport Point. As you know, it's a subdivision located off of Newport, I believe it's 69 units, just north of our water treatment plant. And also with Pantages Bay LLC, Pantages at Discovery Bay LLC. And the reimbursement agreement would provide for the opportunity for the Town of Discovery Bay to negotiate with those developers what the terms of any annexation may be. Due to the fact that both projects lie outside of our boundary, they have to go through an annexation process. Since we don't have land use authority, we don't really have much of a say in that project goes to LAFCO. They will certainly listen to our comments, but they pretty much handle the land use component of the annexation. What the reimbursement agreement does, it provides the district with the ability to negotiate with the separate developers, and the developers are required to deposit a fee of $7,500. Since both projects do lie outside the district boundary, we are unable to expend resources on those projects. To negotiate those agreements, was something that might be in town that would benefit us. So both developers would be required to deposit $7,500, and then we would then move forward with the negotiations and the development of a pre-annexation agreement. Should be noted that back in October of 2005, Pantages entered into a reimbursement agreement with the district and placed on deposit $10,000. So that money is still sitting on deposit with us. It has not been utilized. And we're going to go ahead and terminate that initial agreement if the board moves forward this evening and enter into the new agreement. That way it would be more up to date and current. And I've spoken to Mark Armstrong, and he's very amenable to moving forward with that. What I want to do is ask Rod, to provide a little bit of a description of what a reimbursement agreement might look like and why it's necessary. Not the reimbursement agreement, sorry, the pre-annexation agreement.
I know what you meant. So a pre-annexation agreement is the agreement that sets forth the conditions that a special district or another land use entity might have prior to annexation. So as you come across the things that may be important to the district, canal crossings, bridges, this is something that we just discussed here a moment ago in terms of filtration or increasing capacity, you would include that by way of a pre-annexation agreement so the developer knows in advance of what kind of conditions they're going to face before they're able to start developing. It's important to take advantage of this pre-annexation opportunity because once LAFCO approves it, then your hands are a bit tied. They will have completed all of their entitlements, and this is an opportunity for you to get your foot in the door and request conditions prior to the annexation. The agreement before you tonight is not about the merits of the project. It's really about how to fund the cost of services that you might have in completing that negotiation. Obviously, there's legal fees associated with drafting a pre-annexation agreement. There's staff time to calculate and figure out what the cost might be, engineering services for figuring out what the conditions might be included in a pre-annexation agreement. And this agreement is merely to cover your expenses associated with that drafting or preparation of those conditions for a pre-annexation agreement.
Any questions from the audience? Okay.
Move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Alrighty. Special District Leadership Academy Conference.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of the board. At the last board meeting, I reported back as the Director Wiesen and Director Vice President Graves, I should say, on the CSDA conference that took place in Monterey 2 weeks ago. At that conference, one of the discussion items came up as they were discussing, CSDA was discussing one of their next opportunities for board actions, and it's a Special District Leadership Academy Conference. Normally, the conferences rotate north and south each year, and this year is in Northern California. So it's, from a cost standpoint, it's timely. The Leadership Conference begins on November the 17th and ends on November the 20th around noon. We have a bachelor board meeting on November 20th that afternoon, if I believe that's a Wednesday afternoon. The benefits of the Leadership Academy, it provides the board and staff as well with just an overall ability to work better together. There's a series of classes, and if you go to page 131 in your packet, in your PDF, there's an outline of the different classes that take place there. I've participated in a couple of them, and I can tell you that each of those instructors is excellent. In fact, Brent Dives, the gentleman that we've discussed having come to meet with our board, is actually speaking at a couple of those sessions, half-day sessions there. And in talking to him and in talking to the CSDA staff and with Director Wiesen, felt that I would like to bring this to the board and see if it's something that you would like to attend. One of the things that I am striving for this year, this fiscal year, is to achieve a couple of things for this district. One of them is called the Certificate of Transparency. District of Transparency, there's a process that you go through. There's a whole long checklist of things you go through, and we've all met almost all of those. So I'm very happy that, just looking down the list, we only have a couple more we have to check off that list. The second one is to become a district of distinction. There's only a handful of districts in the state, or the 4,000 special districts, that have actually qualified to become a district of distinction. What that does is it provides the board and staff the knowledge base and the education to do the best jobs that they can do, working together, working for the constituencies that we represent. So that's something I would like to achieve in the next year, and this is a big step in getting to that. I think it would be a good certificate to have for us to be able to say that we are a district of distinction, because we've gone through and taken all the proper classes, and we all know our roles and within our business operations. The cost for all five board members and myself to attend is approximately $7,500. It's $600 per individual to participate, to register, and then the difference would be in hotels, miscellaneous meals, and miscellaneous mileage. So if the board would like to pursue this, pursuant to Government Code 61047, you have to be able to pre-approve it in advance for board members' attendance. So I'm just looking for your input and direction, and if this is something you'd like to pursue.
Where's it being held?
It is being held in Napa, and I believe it's at a Marriott.
Is this program a new program with special districts, or is this something that goes along with the conferences that some of the board members just attended?
No, this is good question. It is a new conference. This is the first year they're having it. It's going to rotate between Northern and Southern California, and it's something that they have worked with some of their constituents, districts, member districts, as well as some of their consultants that they use for their programming, and it's an extension of that. It's a much more in-depth, where you get an hour over a variety of different subjects at the conference. You get 4-hour blocks of education in a certain area, and it takes you through the operations. Like I said, if you go down there, there are a foundation for good governance. That's good for the board. The district's mission, charting the course. That would be in strategic planning, which is something that I'll be bringing to you in the near future. communications, what your role is, should one of the conference titles, Show Me the Money, what do board members need to know about district finances. That's a 4-hour session, so that's pretty in-depth on just versus just a 1 hour sitting in a conference room.
Do you know if these are interactive, or is this more of a, I'll call it a lecture type atmosphere?
The very first session that's there on November the 18th with the gentleman named David Aranda, Building a Foundation for Good Governance, I participated in that session in Monterey, and it was interactive. I can't speak for the other ones, but knowing how their sessions work, they're all pretty generally interactive. If you have a question, you raise your hand. They ask for input, you give suggestions, you give what your experiences are. I've never felt them to be, and Director Steele's been there, Kevin's been there, Marianne's been there. I've never felt them to be nothing more than interactive. They've never really been lecture types.
I've never really had a bad session at any of these where I walked away and said I got nothing out of it. And typically in an hour session, they'll do a 40-minute kind of presentation type of thing with a 20-minute. That's one of the interactive. They'll give you, feed you the information, but they always give you a period of time to be able to respond, ask questions, make sure that it's absorbed, make sure that you're communicating. They typically have pretty quality people that run these things. And one other question, I'm sorry, are you done? Don't interrupt you.
No, I think the questions that I have been answered. I'll just go on record now. It appears to me that I think it certainly would be worthwhile attending, and I'll certainly make time if the board decides to go.
And I believe that if we were to do something less than that and even bring in a consultant here, the cost is even more. People wanted $8,500 to come talk to us for a one-day thing. Was that correct?
Well,
It's not exactly the same.
It's not the same, but the bones of the conversation, I think, would be there. And the fact that Brent is there and Marianne, and I know Kevin and Chris have participated in some of his sessions in the past, as have I, he is very interactive. And knowing the sessions that he has and the sessions that he's having here that are on the agenda for the schedule here, they appear to be very similar to some of the things that I think would benefit the whole board, myself, and the community.
They start the first day. This is on a Sunday.
It starts on a Monday morning, but Sunday night is just the welcoming
travel day. Get up there and stay in.
You can go either set Sunday, Monday morning. It's just an early morning start on a Monday morning.
Any other discussion?
I like the idea of this leadership conference. I'd be supporting out of the board.
So. Any public comment? Okay. You need a motion from the board?
Move to approve a staff recommendation.
Second. Any further discussion?
I actually don't believe there's a staff recommendation on this, though, right?
I would move that the board approve the attendance at this particular conference on the dates indicated in the
for the entire board.
For the entire board.
I got a second.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Okay.
I think that you will all, those of you who have not participated in some of the CSD programs, I think you really enjoy it.
No.
I got you yet. Ask Chris first. You've already said no, you can't change your mind. Chris, any comments?
I just want to ask, with the recent tragedy of that child on the street and the bicycle, I'm just going to ask, when you're in your parking lot, when you're backing out, to just be aware of your surroundings when you're driving or when you're walking, because accidents happen pretty fast.
Marianne?
No comments.
Nope.
Oh, I'm good. Thank you.
Ready? Manager's report. General manager's report.
None this evening.
Oh, hallelujah. District legal.
As always, pleasure to be here.
I was going to give you one, but Greg gave it on the regional water visit this morning, so that would have been it.
Beautiful. Committee updates, none. Correspondence? public records. Any future agenda items? Any future agenda items?
Yeah.
Said. Thank you for coming.
Got that one pretty quick.